Welcome to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. Each weekday here on GCN, I strive to expose the beguiling and the destructive myths that are associated with religion and politics, with patriotism and the media, as well as with military and economic schemes. Instead of merely presenting news, the mission of this program is to help you understand what is occurring behind the headlines while shattering myths. Then during our second hour, we're going to engage God on his term by way of his one and only covenant and through his always dependable Torah teaching, so that with his guidance, you'll be able to replace your religion with reason and engage in a relationship with him. Our phone number for those who would like to participate is 877-300-7645. This morning I heard SRN present the news on North Korea. And for fear of treading into the same quagmire and reporting that North Korea threatened for the first time to launch a preemptive nuclear strike against the United States and against South Korea, and issued a warning as the United Nations was preparing new tough sanctions on its nuclear program, I'm reminded that the great moron and egomaniac of North Korea is like a crying baby screaming for attention when the only thing that is wrong is the idiot himself. So you have to wonder, why is the world playing into his hands? Why is this an item on everyone's top 10 news page this morning? We know that even if they have a bomb, the best they've been able to do is a small detonation. We have no concept whatsoever. If they have a actual bomb that can be put on top of a missile, which is, you know, another step altogether from being able to create one in the first place, and we have witnessed their missiles. The last time they made a big hoop-de-doo, their missile went awry, and it has virtually every time they've attempted to shoot one. They know that they're far more likely to blow themselves up than anyone else if they were to attempt a strike. And they also know that with one bomb, a low-grade bomb, sent by a unsophisticated missile in the direction of the United States, that should it even do any harm in the United States, even hit the continent, that North Korea would be destroyed. He is not threatening a preemptive nuclear strike against the United States. He's craving attention. Don't give it to him. I suspect, however, that the reason that politicians and news agencies and the like make a big deal out of this is that in the socialist secular humanism's quest to control people, it is always important to have a boogeyman, an enemy, even if that enemy has to be aggrandized way beyond their capability, even if the enemy has to be created out of thin air, as is the case with a war against terrorism. You can't have a war against a tactic, or the war against global warming, that we all must make sacrifices to prevent the earth from boiling over when, in fact, there has been no global warming. At least none that man is responsible for, and most certainly none in the most recent decade or two. And I suspect that many politicians in their quest for control are just craving any justifications, no matter how absurd, for more military spending. I read in the news this morning that the man that so many fundamentally mistaken Christians viewed as the model of the Antichrist. You know, so many of the eschatologists says, "Oh, this must be the man because he had the mark of the beast." Yes, he had this reddish blotch on his forehead, and he came out of the evil empire, according to Ronald Reagan, the patron saint of fundamentalist Christian wackos, said it must have been Mikhail Gorbachev. Well, Mikhail Gorbachev has now grown old and fluffy. Doesn't look very menacing anymore. You see a picture of him in the news behind his most recent quotes. But he has said something that I think is interesting. Now, Gorbachev was a communist. He was a communist at a interesting time in history when an alcoholic named Boris Yeltsin was peacefully encouraging Russians to oppose their dictatorial communist government that's deprived them of everything, including freedom and prosperity. And Mikhail Gorbachev lost the ability to oppress his people. And so rather than fighting it, he's kind of like Bill Clinton when the contract with America was foisted upon him by Newt Gingrich, decided that maybe what I need to do here is just embrace the inevitable and make it look like I'm the agent for change as the one who was vested. That's what Bill Clinton did with the contract with America, took all the credit for its mandate and lambasted its author, Newt Gingrich. And so Mikhail Gorbachev became the heroine of Democrats worldwide when it was Yeltsin's actions. Well, today, Mikhail Gorbachev is denouncing the new set of laws that have been passed in Russia as an attack on the rights of citizens. In an interview with the BBC, he called on President Vladimir Putin not to be afraid of his own people. But, of course, all dictators are afraid of their own people. Putin is a dictator. The only thing that has changed in Russia is Russia has gone from communist to fascist. And the change is so subtle, most don't get it because they view fascism as the far extreme of communism when fascism and communism are kissing cousins. The only difference between communism and fascism is that in a fascist state, it is possible for oligarchs to control property and businesses so that the number of people who can prosper at the expense of others in a fascist regime is greater than those who can prosper in a communist regime. In a communist regime, only the politically elect, and they're not elected, but the political heads of state prosper. The people, of course, are all treated as if they were slaves. In a fascist country, the people are also treated as if they were slaves, but you have merchants and bankers and industrialists who are in lockstep with the fascist government, that, and supportive of the fascist government that prosper as well. That is what's happened in Russia. So Mr. Gorbachev also criticized Mr. Putin's inner circle, said it was full of thieves and corrupt officials. Well, that's true. What happened with the collapse of communism in the former Soviet Union is that the most corrupt members of the KGB and of the Russian mafia took control. The wealthiest people in the world today, by most standards, although their wealth is too hidden in many cases to be typically be at the top of the Forbes list, but they are Russians. And so Putin was a KGB thief, and all of those that he associates with are similarly inclined. If you go by an FBO at most every major airport and search for the owners of the most expensive jets, they are typically Russian oligarchs. The laws, according to Gorbachev, include fines for organizing protests, stiffer libel penalties if you criticize anyone in the inner circle, and a wider definition of treason and restrictions on websites on free speech. We've been talking about this for now a decade, that Russia simply went from communism to fascism, and as a fascist country under the dictatorship of Putin, that conditions have not improved in Russia. I was in Russia about a year and a half ago, and it was indistinguishable from the broken-down place that I saw back during the days of the Iron Curtain when it was communist. In January, Human Rights Watch accused President Putin of unleashing, quote, the worst political crackdown in Russia's post-Soviet history since returning the Kremlin for a third time in 2012. Yes. Russia is what Russia has been for a very, very long time. It was a dictatorship under the czars. It became a dictatorship under the control of Lenin and then Stalin. In fact, Lenin and Stalin's secular humanist regime was the second most brutal regime in human history. Second only to Mao's socialist secular regime in China, the Russians killed some 30 million of their own people. The Chinese killed 40 million of theirs. For those who are atheists and agnostics, who condemn religion because it is deadly, because it is uncivilized in terms of what it, the hate and the discrimination and the death and destruction that it perpetrates on the world, you ought to look into a mirror, because the most deadly regime in human history have been communist, socialist, secular humanism. Nothing has changed in Russia. Just because somebody puts on a fascist hat does not exclude them from being a socialist, secular humanist. This was an interesting story. It's the idiotic nature of religion. It explains that people literally have lost the capacity to think, that immorality is now touted as the new morality. This is from France. A mother has gone on trial in southern France for sending her son to nursery school wearing a T-shirt saying, quote, "I am a bomb," and born on 11 September. Botra Bagor, 35, was reported to police by the teacher last September and charged with glorifying crime. At the start of her trial in Avignon, France, she denied defending terrorism. Oh, of course not. Guess what Mrs. Bagnor's son, who was wearing "I am a bomb," born on September 11th, guess what this loving mother chose to call her son? How about jihad? I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yada. Our number is 877-300-7645. Is it any wonder that Yahweh etched in stone on the second of 10 statements that fathers, in this case as a mother, corrupt their children to the third and fourth generations. You know, when you first read that, if you haven't yet, embraced the realization that God is opposed to religion, that religion is terribly corrupting. You might read that and say, why is God saying that, you know, the innocent little children, why is God saying that he's going to hold the perversities of the fathers against their children? What do the little children, what did they do? And that's kind of the mindset that gets people going off on the so-called God of the Old Testament is so mean-spirited. That's so unfair. You know, God must love all the little children. But here God is saying, and you've corrupted, you've perverted your children to the third and fourth generation. But he's speaking about the likes of this woman. What is the odds that this child is going to grow up to observe the Torah, to come to know Yahweh, to come to understand the terms and conditions of the covenant and accept them? What do you think the likelihood is that this child observing Pesach, Matzah, and Bikurim? So low, you might call it zero. But what are the likelihood that this child, corrupted as it is by its mother and father, is likely to be a jihadist and live out its name, than to become a human bomb? The repulsive nature parents as they indoctrinate their children in the poison of their religions. Is pedophilia of the worst kind? It is. You read this kind of thing, and then you read this pathetic Muslim mother's comments. Oh, I didn't think that by naming my son Jihad and putting him in a T-shirt that says I am a bomb and born on 11 September was wrong. I wasn't trying to defend Jihad. I wasn't trying to support 9/11. Oh no. I just thought it was a clever T-shirt because my child was born on September 11th. I didn't stop to think about it. Makes you want to vomit. You know, it's the reason why God said that as his children had left the poisonous milieu of Egypt, the crucible of Egypt, the most political and religious place on earth, the most militaristic place on earth, the most economically depraved place on earth, that the last thing he wanted his children to do was enter his promised land infected by the same kind of religious faith, this rubbish, this poison. And so he said, you know, the host of religion are people. And the only way that we can be a people set apart, that I can allow you to enter my home, is to rid my home of this poison. And here you find the consequence of allowing this poison to come right back home. When we allow parents to do this to children, we condemn our future. It is such a sad state of affairs. And you know, yesterday there was a comment which was then retracted by our guest that saying, well, God loves all the little children. It doesn't matter if they're Christian or Muslim or Hindu or what they may be. And, no, he doesn't. God does not love Jihad. Chances are he doesn't know Jihad, but he most certainly doesn't love him. And he does not love Jihad's mother or father. God does not love religion. Moving on to a different subject, but one every bit is germane to our fall. The city that is most synonymous with the manufacturing might of America is now destitute and bankrupt. Michigan Governor Rick Snyder on Friday formally declared Detroit a fiscal emergency and said that he had identified a person to take over the financial management of the destitute city. You know, Detroit is probably the most Islamic city in America. Do you know that Detroit is probably the most liberal city in America? Do you know Detroit is probably the most unionized city in America? Look what's happened to Detroit. It is financially bankrupt, something that soon will happen to the rest of this nation. Welcome back to Shattering Mist. I'm your host, Dietta. You can participate in this program by calling 877-300-7645. You know, as a backstop to this story about how Detroit, the city of America's economic backbone at one time, now a destitute place that has had a 25% decline in population over the last 10 years, is now shrunk to the 18th largest city in America when it was once the fifth largest city in America. But it certainly is a testament to the declining capability of American manufacturing. That the idiots that Americans have elected to positions of power in this country have so systematically strangled business that business is no longer able to produce. The combination of enhancing labor over the productive nature of the plants, such that companies that are highly unionized become highly inefficient. Look at the airlines. Look at the automobile industry, the two most labor-intense industries. Or look at the at our schools and the fact that we're graduating thoughtless children that no longer can exercise good judgment in an environment where virtually every teacher is part of a union. The once I said as a backdrop to this, the fact that the economists are just all in a twitter because the first-time claims for unemployment benefits were 348,000 last week. Those are first-time claims. That this last week was 7,000 claims less than the rolling four-week average. Well, 7,000 on 348, when 348,000 is just the initial claims last week for this odd entity called an unemployment benefit. Yes, indeed. In America, it is a benefit to be unemployed. Oh, yes, if you're unemployed, you get the benefit of the government giving you money. If you're unemployed, you get the benefit of the government giving you welfare. You get the benefit of the government giving you income tax credits so that rather than paying tax, the government sends you checks. In a separate report, the Commerce Department said that the trade gap also rose to $44.45 billion for the month of January. That means that that the products the Americans exported, which are typically oil from the Alyeska pipeline in Alaska, which we send off to Japan, and food, cardboard, kind of third world type commodities, was less than the manufactured goods that we imported by a gap of $44 billion for the month. All tells you how badly the American economy has been mismanaged. And it's one thing to have mismanaged it so badly that America remains mired in a recession that the government created. But it's another thing to have the President of the United States now be anti-business, where his entire mindset is to oppose business. From his perspective, the great engine of American opportunity is a vibrant middle class, when he does not realize that a middle class is a byproduct of business. It's a consequence of business. The middle class does not create business. It is a consequence of business. Speaking of government malfeasance, the European Union have struck a provision on new financial rules, the highlight of which is capping bank bonuses. So this last recession that exists not only in the United States but in Europe was created primarily by politicians mismanaging lending institutions, mismanaging banks. Their solution now is to put more regulations on the banks who with government interference, caused the last recession. It is literally the political interference in the financial markets that created this last recession. So now the politicians throughout Europe are going to say, yep. So that being the case, the solution to over-regulating and mismanaging the financial sector and turning the financial sector into a quasi-public sector is that let's impose more controls. So first step in that, we're going to tax every transaction. They did that about 6 months ago. So that we, as the government, are going to receive a tax on every transaction that they conduct. And next, here's our next ploy. We're going to limit the amount that bankers can be paid so that we are assured that the kind of people that are attracted to those positions are people that we will be able to easily manipulate. Welcome to the new world. this is the kind of result of government interference, and as well as government universal idiocy as it comes to economics, where indulgences by of the people become the means for politicians to be reelected, for them to be seen as loving and caring and worthy, while bankrupting their countries. A fresh unemployment, excuse me, say the rate of unemployment in the Eurozone was recently updated to a record high. The jobless rate in the 17 countries that use the euro rose to 12%. 12% are those people who are out of work and are still looking for work. Now, there's another 6% that are out of work that are not looking for work. They're not counted. And there's another 6% that are underemployed, working part-time, searching for full-time work. They're not reported. So the actual number is twice the 12%. But still, the reported number is 12% and growing. The highest rate, of course, was in Greece, where 27% are out of work and still looking for work. All of the data supporting a rate cut, which we see in the second quarter, stands now. They're in the same position, the United States. They can't cut central banking rates. They're already at zero. And so they're also talking about, with unemployment so high, they don't know how to respond, because you still have the unresolved debt crisis problems in Greece, Spain, Portugal, and Northern Ireland. And, of course, then there is the issue of what does one do with Great Britain. The highest unemployment rates that were reported in the January figures were 26% in Spain and 17% in Portugal, and, of course, the 27% in Greece. Moving back to religion, Thailand's government has signed a peace treaty with Muslims. Oh, what a swell thing to do. Not a whole lot of people here that on this planet that have thought through the Treaty of Hudaybiyya or have read the opening lines of the Ninth Surah. The opening lines of the Ninth Surah says that a treaty or a vow between Muslims and non-Muslims is not binding on the Muslim. So whatever you give up, they will take. Whatever you promise, they will accept. And you will get absolutely nothing in return. But the world doesn't seem to want to learn. So in Thailand, more than 5,000 people have been killed since the conflict reunited in the Muslim-majority region in 2004. The deal came when ahead of a meeting with Kuala Lumpur between Malaysian prime ministers and the Thai prime minister. You see, with the Muslim population of Thailand and their murderous behavior, there weren't even direct talks. No, Thailand went to Malaysia, which is an Islamic country, for Malaysia to negotiate with these murderers. Speaking after the talks, the Prime Minister of Thailand said that she would move forward as soon as possible. She said Thailand was willing to engage in the process of dialogue with all relevant stakeholders and groups concerned, and that they want to address the root causes of the problem. Well, what do you think the root cause of the problem of Muslims in Thailand having killed 5,000 Thai citizens? Do you think maybe the problem is Islam? And so what is Miss Prime Minister going to do in Thailand when she finds out that the problem is Islam, that that is the root cause of the problem? Now what do you do? In a related story, 14 people were killed in clashes to end the siege of Malaysia's Sabah province by a Philippines clan. So some Filipinos traveled to some Malaysian islands to reestablish their theocracy, and the Malaysians responded by killing 14 people. The Sabah police chief said that that two of his officers and 12 Filipino rebels were killed in the shootout. Lahad Datu was occupied in early February by members of a Muslim clan that consider themselves to be royal. They are from the Philippines, and they call themselves the Royal Army of Sulu. Yes, I guess that that has a more aristocratic ring to it than calling yourself jihad. They are demanding recognition as the rightful owners of the Sabah province. The group, some of them armed, had been urged to end their siege by the Malaysian and the Philippine governments. Now, I'm sure the Philippine government was happy to see them gone. Mr. Karam, the younger brother of the self-proclaimed Sultan of Sulu, Jalamal Karam III, led the gang of at least 100 from their home on the Philippine islands of Sulu in early February to the shores of Sabah. Now, here's a situation where it is probably correct to assume that the Malaysian government confiscated the Sulu Sultanate and declared the islands that belonged to them theirs. But in the world of Islam, one never gives back what one conquers. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. Hello and welcome back to Shattering Myths. Did a little homework over the break, and it is true that the Sulu Sultanate once spread over the southern Pacific islands, from the Philippines to Indonesia, even included parts of Borneo, and that Sabah was part of the Sulu Sultanate, but it became a British protectorate in the 1800s. Of course, as we now know, it is part of Malaysia. Malaysia claimed the region in 1963. So do the people have a claim? Absolutely. Do they, unlike, for example, the mythical people known as the Palestinians, have actual roots where they once governed these places, that they have a history there? Absolutely. But in the case of Islam, Islam never gives up what it conquers, not without a fight. And they are using the mythical people called the Palestinians to artificially justify claims to a land that they have no history. But how about this story? The Malaysian security forces today killed another 31 Filipino gunmen on the island of, this time on the island of Borneo. And the government rejected calls by the United Nations to end the fighting. The most vicious Malaysian attack in this region was on East Timor. They killed, I think it was a quarter of a million Christians in East Timor. Did so about 25 years ago, the Malaysian government. Not only wasn't it condemned for doing so, nations like the United States aided and abetted it, provided cover for the Malaysian government as it was perpetrating genocide on the on East Timor. Well, now the Malaysian government, being an Islamic government, is back at it again. This time they killed 31 Filipinos on Borneo. At least 60 people, including 8 Malaysian police officers, have been killed in the nearly month-long conflict in order to quiet the claims of the Philippine-based Sultan to assert his historic claim over parts of the Borneo island. The Secretary General is closely following the situation in Sabah, Malaysia. So it's now Sabah, Malaysia, has nothing to do with the historic claim that others had to the region. a spokesperson for the Jamalul Karim III, the leader of the group fighting in the Malaysian state of Sabah, said the Sultanate was declaring a unilateral ceasefire in reaction to the call by the United Nations. He said that the order was given for the group to take a defensive position and not to engage Malaysian troops. So what is the Islamic solution for people who have a legitimate claim to territory they have confiscated? Kill them. Speaking of killing, the NATO-led international force apologized for murdering two Afghan boys. They were killed when a Apache gunship fired on them, mistaking them for insurgents. And there, my friends, is a summation of the Afghan invasion, is why it was plagued from the beginning. Yes, I understand these are just two children amongst the millions who died as a result. I shouldn't say millions, plural. It's probably 1 million who died as a result of the American invasion of two countries, Iraq and Afghanistan. It was like Vietnam in the sense that it was impossible for anyone to distinguish who was a good guy and who was a bad guy, or even if there were any good guys. There was not an army that we were fighting. No one was going to be wearing uniforms. The very people that our government said we were going in to liberate were the ones who hated us and wanted to kill us. We put our troops in an impossible position, and this is what happens. And not only did we end up using our Apache gunships to gun down two young Afghan boys, the very fact that we perpetrated this murder does nothing but inflame the hatred the Afghanis have for us. So here America sacrificed thousands of American lives, hundreds of billions of dollars of American treasure, and all we did is cause a country to hate us because the idiot president of the United States, George W. Bush, couldn't recognize the lessons learned or unlearned in Vietnam, where you don't go in and invade a country if you don't know who the enemy is, if you're unable to distinguish friend from foe, if in fact there are no friends and only foes. But we have dug ourselves in ever deeper in Afghanistan. I am Yada. This is Shattering Mess.
Farmers keep livestock lean and healthy with a mineral-rich diet. Then, before market, they cut off minerals, leading them to crave high-calorie grains. If weight control is this easy, why prescribe surgery?